Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Hi, everyone. Welcome to one of those in-between-isodes where I answer any question you have for me. This one is, why was Africa never as developed as the rest of the world? Okay, here's a question that can definitely stir up a hornet's nest of controversy. So what the heck, let's get into it. Well, first of all, to address the elephant in the room, and I like to address my elephants because you don't want them rampaging and stampeding around, I want to completely throw out any idea about the whole race question. I don't want to entertain any notions like the bell curve, the Charles Murray book that says intelligence amongst different races doesn't just have socio-cultural influences, but also genetic components. So let's not even entertain that right now. But to say that somehow development has any racial connection isn't even historically borne out. Now, the answer to the question that Africa has had more challenges than other places on Earth has to do a lot with what some historians say is climate. There's a really famous book by evolutionary biologist Jared Diamond called Guns, Germs, and Steel. He argues that the reason you see civilization develop in Eurasia and not really as much in the New World is because of the three things in the title of his book, guns, germs, and steel. If you had guns, you had military superiority. Germs, if you had more exposure to different types of illnesses, then your body's immunological defense system had a better portfolio. So that's why in the old world, people had developed exposure to smallpox, but when they came to the new world, it wiped out indigenous populations. And steel. There is steel in the old world in a way there is not in the new world, so it allowed for development. Now, a lot of historians don't like this book, and I'd say I'm one of them because he looks at everything through environment, basically saying that civilizations are almost completely determined by environmental conditions. I'd say that takes agency out of people completely, out of military power, economics, literature, culture, and everything else. But Diamond is on to a few things. There are challenges, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, that make it a more difficult place than other places on planet Earth. For example, a lot of animals in Africa can't be domesticated. Take a zebra, for example. It's related to the horse, but it hasn't been tamed and can't be. Why? Well, one theory is that they co-evolved with man, so it would not be tamed. Animals tamed and used by men have been the ones that were not in contact with humans for some time. Horses stayed in America, then went over to Asia, so for millions of years, the species didn't have contact with humans, and it's easier to tame animals that have that natural history. And also, bacteria and viruses have always been more lethal in Africa south of the Sahara Desert. Take the recent example of the Ebola virus. You also have more prevalence of malaria in Africa and other places in South Asia as well. John Reeder wrote a book called Africa, A Biography of a Continent, and he says that much of Africa's history is explained by its fragile soils and erratic weather. They make for conservative social and political systems. He says the communities which endured were those that directed available energies primarily towards minimizing the risk of failure, not maximizing returns. This created societies designed for survival, not development. The qualities needed for survival are the opposite of those needed for developing, such as making experiments and taking risks. Some societies were wealthy, but accumulating wealth was next to impossible. Most people bartered, and there were few traders. Also, trade is more difficult in Africa, at least on the continent, compared to other areas. Let's look at the example of America. America is blessed as being a continent, at least with the Mississippi and Missouri rivers in North America, where you can go for over 1,000 miles and not encounter major waterfalls. So if you have permanent boats, you can travel a very long way and develop trade. That isn't the case in Africa, where you have huge waterfalls. Would you want to take a barge down that? I don't think so. It's a similar reason while river travel is difficult in Russia, because when you get deep in the taiga and other places, it'll simply freeze over in the winter. And when you have long rivers, it's easier to traverse and build up your economy. Same thing in Europe as well. You could go a long distance on the river, but you didn't have that capability in Africa. Well, despite the challenges of the environment in Africa, we can't still discount the fact that there were tremendous contributions to civilization that were equal to its counterparts in Asia and Europe, and many times in its history actually surpassed it. Think about the Carthaginians, for example. They were an empire, or you could consider them a trade empire, based out of northern Africa in Carthage, which is modern-day Algeria, that basically controlled the western Mediterranean, had outposts in Spain and England, and dominated that part of the globe until the Punic Wars with Rome. And let's not forget the Egyptians. They were in northern Africa. Egypt built the pyramids in 2000 BC and dominated the Bronze Age until the Bronze Age collapse of 1177 BC, when the Hittites and the Minoan civilization also went down at the same time. The Carthaginians built small trading settlements through the Sahara Desert and scattered throughout the Middle East. They were able to navigate by stars, unlike their Greek and Roman counterparts, who, without any compass, were forced to sail within sight of land. And when we get further into history, we find other great examples of African civilizations. If you were alive around, let's say 1300 AD, the richest civilization on Earth would arguably be the Empire of Mali. In the 1300s, Ibn Battuta, who was a traveler who went all over the Islamic world at that time, which goes from northern Africa into the Middle East, and he went into India, to Indonesia, to China, about four or five times farther than Marco Polo, toward the end of his life, he went to Mali and thought it to be the richest civilization that he saw of anywhere on Earth. When he went there, he wanted to visit Musa I, who is famous for his unequaled wealth. He was richer than the dozens of kings, emperors, and monarchs that Ibn Battuta had met over the decades. Musa I controlled Africa's gold and salt trades, which Europe didn't yet have access to, so it made him really wealthy. In 1324, he made his pilgrimage to Mecca from Mali, and the procession reportedly included 60,000 men, 12,000 slaves, each holding a 4-pound gold bar, heralds adorned with silk clutching golden staffs, and horses with handled bags. There were 80 camels, each carrying between 50 and 300 pounds of gold, which was distributed to the poor along the journey. Now, this is what sources say. I'm sure they're exaggerating, but various sources attest to his journey, and it was very extravagant. He was basically like Rockefeller walking around throwing around $100 bills. And as sources are to be believed, he funded the construction of a new mosque each Friday. The king's wealth was so enormous that his inflation-adjusted fortune equals $400 billion. Depending on what list you read online, it typically lists Musa as the richest man in history, and his infusion of gold into the economies of Egypt, Mecca, and Medina when he traveled are believed to have crashed their economies as the metal was enormously devalued. So there you go. Yes, Africa has had its challenges in history, but to say it's always been impoverished, as we can see with these episodes, isn't really the case. Well, thanks for the question. If you would like to submit a question to me about history, you can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/podcast. There you can send it to me by email or leave a voice message. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history related, from ancient Greece to the Cold War. You can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/subscribe. Speaking of History on the Net, if you want to dive deeper, go to our site, historyonthenet.com, and there you'll find blog posts, book reviews, and all of our other podcast episodes. Plus, don't forget to rate and review this podcast so we can bring you the best daily history content possible. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.